The show is sponsored by Dunkin' Cold K Cups. Dunkin' Cold K Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. It's convenient and tasty. You brew over ice, straight out of the Keurig coffee maker. You just brew over ice and you sip them in seconds. You're going to love these Dunkin' Cold K Cups. Enjoy the bold, smooth Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find Dunkin' Cold Coffee in the roasted coffee aisle. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally and cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Hello.
Rob, where are you?
What up? I'm in Santa Barbara.
There you go. There you go.
Hey, everybody. It's Literally with me, Rob Lowe. Today, Kevin Dillon will be with us to discuss Entourage and, I mean, Johnny Drama. Come on. You know you love him. And but also some early stuff. We're going to do deep cuts with Kevin Dillon. A little Platoon, perhaps. A little John Densmore and the Doors. And, of course, I'm going to ask him about his insane brother, Matt Dillon, because I have a lot of post-traumatic stress from my years with Matt. After The Outsiders, running around New York City. I'm just going to say it. Now we had a blast. Anyway, let's get to it. Kevin, my man, what are you doing? Where are you and how are you?
I'm actually in L.A. right now at Action Park Studios, where
Excellent.
We do my podcast. I got a podcast called Victory the Podcast, which I'd love to have you on.
Absolutely.
One of these days.
How did I never end up on Entourage?
I don't know. That's an outrage. You know what? If we do the reboot, you're coming on. We got to have
you. I mean, Ellen is a friend. I've known him a little bit off and on through the thing, but Chad Lowe was on it.
Yeah, Chad.
So funny in the Entourage movie, Chad Lowe.
Yeah, he's great, man. He's great. By the way, Doug Allen is here right now. He's in the other room. Kevin Connolly's in another room over here.
Jesus, you got the whole Magilla.
Yeah, we're going to do a Victory podcast right after yours.
How many episodes in the watch party are you on Victory?
You know, I'm not really sure, but it's probably about 115 or so.
Holy shit.
Yeah. How many have you done?
We're like 103 episodes already.
Nice.
Something like that. Yeah, nice. I love it. I don't know about you, but I love podcasts.
Yeah, I love it. I pop on. I've been, when I work, I like to focus on the acting thing. But, Kevin Connolly and Doug Allen will hold down the fort until I come back. But,
great.
Yeah, it's fun, man. It really is. We have a hoot.
Yeah, I unfortunately, it's kind of just me. So I'm like, this is my one day off on my, I'm doing a show for Netflix right now. And
yeah.
So like, oh, great, enjoy your day off. I'm like, I'm doing two podcasts. It's not a day off.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's super fun. And it's great to talk to you because, I mean, I think I was trying to think about the very first time I ever met you. And I think it might have been at like, it was definitely a nightclub in New York.
Yeah.
I feel like it might have been like Area. Is that possible? Is it possible? Do you remember
totally
Area?
That's possible, bro. That sounds about right. Area.
So good.
Yeah, right? So long ago, man. So long. Back when clubs were fun, man. Now it's all the bottle service. They suck
Dude,
now.
You're talking my language. Okay, bottles, you know the song Video Killed the Radio Star, right?
Yeah.
Bottle service killed.
Killed the nightclubs, right?
Killed the night. Killed it dead.
Yeah, because there's no more socializing. Everyone just stays within their little group. It's not like you have to go to the bar. You can meet people there. And it just you just stay within your little table. Just killed it.
And look, and there were always like rich older guys trolling, but now, yeah. but now they run the thing because they're paying for the booth, they're paying
they're
for the bottle.
$20,000 in bottles.
I was an unemployed actor. I couldn't afford any of that shit.
Yeah, you were unemployed. I don't know about that.
There was a moment. There was a moment.
But yeah, I mean, our careers, the two of us have been doing this for so long, man. I know I started in 84.
Yeah.
And you probably started around that time too. I know you and Matt did Outsiders.
Outsiders was 82. We shot it in, I think.
Wow. 82.
Came out in 83. It's funny because because Matt was a bigger, you know, Matt was an icon already. And
yeah,
I remember the very first time I wrote about it in my book. We were walking in the Tulsa Excelsior lobby shooting Outsiders, and because Matt was already we were unknowns, but Matt was already famous. All these girls were there to see Matt, and they would literally line the lobby three deep.
Wow.
And I remember walking in, and I'd never seen anything like it, and Matt in his, you know, with his boombox.
Yeah, he always had the boombox going.
Oh, always.
He loves his music, still does.
Always with the boombox, and it was always like T-Rex was like his thing.
Yeah, he loved any kind of punk and Sex Pistols.
He's got his T-Rex playing on the boombox, and he's kind of looking at the girls as he walks by, and he kind of looked at one and like said, gave her the like, hey, come here, like vibe. And she immediately left her three friends, just like they didn't exist anymore.
Oh, man.
She looks back at her friends like, oh, my fucking God. And I remember going, aha.
I remember those days as well because, you know, I was still in high school. And there would be girls driving by the house like, where's Matt? You know, he was nowhere near Mamaroneck at that stage. He was long gone making movies. But there would be thousands of them coming by.
They'd break into my grandparents' house. I'm gonna be at my grandparents.
Oh my God,
those were the days. But
yeah,
and then I remember very vividly when you got Platoon.
Yeah, that was a big break.
Big break for a lot of people. I mean, everybody.
Yeah,
people forget. You Depp was in it.
Johnny Depp was great. He did How to Speak Vietnamese in there. Defoe, Charlie
Berenger.
Yeah, Keith David.
Oh, Keith, how great was Keith David?
Keith was great. He was great. John McGinley, Johnny C. McGinley, so great in that movie.
McGinley, God, he was, I mean, how about that group?
Yeah, I know. It was a great cast. Stone put it together, man.
Was, you must have great Oliver Stone stories. You've got it. Who doesn't?
Yeah, I got a couple. You know, I worked with them on The Doors, too, so I got a couple from that one. I remember we were doing The Doors, we were doing this Warhol scene where we're walking around. We have this big walk and talk. And it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. We're exhausted.
Ugh.
And I was low energy. And I was. Mm. And he's like, Dylan, what the fuck are you doing in my movie? Get your energy up. And it is. It's on me to keep that. It's on us, Rob. We got to keep that energy up.
I did a reading for Oliver of a script called Noriega. It's going to be about Noriega.
It's right up his alley.
The dictator, yeah. And Oliver, Al Pacino was playing Noriega, and I was playing Oliver North.
Wow.
And it's going to be great. And we do the movie never got made. We do the reading. Halfway through, we take a break. I go to the water fountain. I look up Oliver standing over the water fountain, just looking at me, shaking his head, frankly, kind of in disgust. And I go, what? He goes, I don't know, man. I just thought there'd be more energy.
Wow.
And I practically pooped. So we go back into the reading, and the very next scene I have, man, I'm so over the top now. I'm like, going berserk. And I look over and Oliver's just kind of nodding and shaking his head like, yeah.
That's what I wanted. That
he likes energy.
He gets what he wants from an actor. And it's not always the nicest way about going about it, but he'll get what he needs. And he's actually, you know, it could go either way. People get really upset, or you could just go with it. You know, I kind of always went with it. If he yelled at me or something, I'll go take it on the chin and try and do better. That's the way you got to deal with Ollie.
You were in, where'd you do platoon? Philippines?
Philippines, yeah, 3 months.
Were people there going, oh, I remember when they did Apocalypse Now here?
They were, yeah. I mean, Charlie was coming back to the Philippines because Charlie was there when his dad was there. They basically just ousted Marcos. So it was a pretty dangerous time to be there. My parents were like, we don't want you going. And I was like, sorry, guys, I'm going. I'm not going to miss out this opportunity. I just turned 18.
Yep.
And to do a movie in the Philippines with Oliver Stone. And he just screened he did a screening of Salvador, the movie Salvador. Mm-hmm. And it was so damn good. I was like, this guy is going to make a great movie.
He was, yeah. And he wasn't really Oliver Stone. I mean, you know, Salvador was a great first thing, but he wasn't that icon.
He was a writer.
Quite yet. Yeah.
He was a writer. He did Scarface. He wrote Scarface. A lot of people don't know that. And he directed a movie called The Hand. I don't know. I saw it as a kid. I don't know if you ever saw that one. The Hand with the hand crawling around. It was pretty good, actually.
The movie we did was so funny. What we didn't do was so funny because it was like a great movie when it was about Noriega and Oliver North. But then they inevitably got to South America and it became like a Communist Manifesto movie.
Oh, boy.
Which you knew he loved. And people were like falling
asleep.
Why didn't
this movie get done? I mean, it sounds great.
Because the second half was awful. The second half was totally like a political manifesto of the greatness of communism and all the shit that Oliver was into. But it was super funny. And you could just see Al Pacino, you know, kind of going, it's great when it's great and it's not good when it wasn't good. But it was fun. It was fun to be a part of something like that.
Yeah. And how you guys didn't film anything, right?
No.
You just explored it, worked on it a bit. And
yep. Yep. Yeah. That was it. That was my only time with Oliver. Other than speaking of clubs, when clubs were at their height in the 80s, they were making Wall Street in New York, and I was making a movie called Masquerade. And boy, oh boy, between me, Charlie, and Oliver Stone, and Michael Douglas, frankly.
Yeah.
I mean.
And you got McGinley in that one, too. Johnny C. Oh, McGinley.
And Johnny C. I mean, those were the days when you burned a candle at both ends, and we thought we could do it forever and not pay a price.
Yeah, yeah. We were young enough to bounce back. Now it would hurt too much.
Oh, for sure. Well, I'm obsessed with, you know, Johnny Drama's such a great, you know, Vincent Chase, the Vincent Chase I knew, the acting coach.
Yeah, there was an acting coach named Vincent Chase, but I don't really know all the details. But I don't think that's why Doug named him Vincent Chase. I really think it's got to do with David Chase. It was more kind of because he loved David Chase.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's why we became Johnny and Vince Chase.
I had thought it was Mark Wahlberg's first acting coach was Vincent Chase. Okay. Vincent Chase made Mark an actor.
Wow.
His other big student was Bill Paxton, because you know Bill Paxton gave Mark his very first big acting job.
Oh, Bill was such a good guy. What a loss.
I know. Goddamn, he was the best.
He was great, man. He really was.
Yeah. So Vincent Chase used to make the acting coach. He used to make Bill as an exercise do all of his dialogue with a penny between his teeth to help him enunciate. I want to get to the bottom of why his name is Vincent Chase.
Okay.
We got to get to the bottom of this.
Okay, I'll drag Doug Ellen in here right now.
Let's find out what the fuck is up.
We'll get to the bottom of it right now. I think, you know, it might be a combination of both. I know David Chase was, you know, Doug loved David Chase, so I think that's where the Chase, but I don't know. We'll find out.
In Entourage, who do you think the most famous cameo is? I think of Tom Brady, but that's because I'm a Brady fan, maybe.
I would probably say Tom Brady.
I
think you're probably right. I don't know anyone bigger than Tom Brady.
No.
Oh, LeBron.
Yeah.
LeBron was a big cameo.
I mean, you guys had Aaron Sorkin on there, I think.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And what, you know what? We wanted to get Obama, who was the president at the time. Of course, he wouldn't do it, but he loved the show. Maybe the reboot, bro. We'll get you and Obama in a scene together. But, you know, I thought we had, like, James Cameron. To me, that was big. That was big time. It made it feel real.
Made it feel real. And yeah. And the fact that I wanted to see your guys' version of Aquaman. I was so bummed when they actually made Aquaman. And it's, I'm sorry, I'm not a fan of Aquaman.
No, I'm not really either. And a James Cameron version of Aquaman would be way better. I mean, anything James Cameron does, forget it.
James Cameron and water, it's magic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would work. That would work.
Right?
But Aquaman is a tricky one. I mean, anything that's got to be shot underwater is going to be tough.
All of the inside show business stuff on that show used to make me laugh because it was so, I mean, even down to the to Ari's office looked like the office of WME.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Looked exactly the same.
They might even have knocked it off. I mean, they did that stuff all the time on that show.
Yeah.
Everything that happened on that show pretty much happens in real life in Hollywood.
Totally.
Yeah.
Where else can you go surfing and skiing in the same day? Or check out a world-class art museum and camp out under a brilliant night sky same day? Or hike through the redwoods and get a luxury spa treatment? There's only one answer: California. No matter where you go across this state, you will find a way to play. I love California. And I have not yet surfed and skied in the same day, although I do both. So that is on my bucket list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today. Hey, listeners. Ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in store and learn more at macys.com/purpose.
The pandemic's been great for me. It really has. They needed more TV shows, more movies, and I'm ready to do them. So I've been working like crazy. Things have been good.
You got a movie coming out with Bruce Willis.
Yes, I did two with Bruce.
How did you end up doing two with Bruce? Well, Bruce has been just, he's been cranking them out until, you know, now obviously he's ill, so he's not working so much anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the first one, I didn't have any scenes with Bruce, but I was in it. It was called A Day to Die. I thought they figured if they could get Bruce, put the movie, the word die in there, it would be
That's right.
So I did that one. And then the second one I did is coming out, actually. But it's called Wire Room. And that's the first time I realized that, you know, Bruce had some issues, you know. Great guy.
He's one of the best.
And a legend.
Oh.
And it's sad. It's sad. He's...
Speaking of clubs, and we'll get to Bruce in a minute, but do you remember Cafe Central?
Of course, man. Yeah.
I mean, okay, so Cafe Central, again, anything in New York I ever did that was cool, I only did because your brother introduced me to it. So, because, I mean, your brother was the king of New York.
Yeah, yeah, it still is. Although he's spending a lot of his time in Rome now. Almost
really?
All of his time. So he's like the king of Rome now.
Well, okay, let's take a sidetrack. What is he doing in Rome and why?
He's got a Roman girlfriend, and he got an apartment there, and he loves it. It's hard to get him home.
Well, he, like I said, he shepherded all of us through New York, and Cafe Central was the restaurant slash bar that everybody went to, and Bruce Willis was the bartender.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And his name was Bruno then.
Wow.
Bruno. Wow. And then it was like, yeah, Bruno, where's Bruno? Yeah, he went out to, he's got a TV pilot called Moonlighting.
God, he was so great in that show too.
Oh, so good.
His charisma. I mean, he was great. He was just brilliant back then.
He was a brilliant bartender.
Yeah. I don't remember him as a bartender, but
oh yeah,
I mean, maybe I did meet him at some stage back then. But.
Yep. So when you're on the movie with him, what was your sense of his health, and how did you notice what was going on?
Well, you know, I heard some rumblings before that, and you know, he had the ear piece going, and
the earwig for your lines, yeah.
And it was just you know, you could just see it. You could see the he would have a moment of brilliance too, but you could see he's struggling, and it was just really sad.
Yeah,
and it made it tough for me too. I mean, the acting with someone who's, you know, struggling like that, it's pretty tough.
And you know, it happens. You know, I mean, obviously he has a very specific diagnosis, but you know, it happens with usually actors who are much older than Bruce. But
yeah, I mean, 65. You don't expect that.
Nothing.
You know?
No.
And he looks great. I mean, physically, he's great. He's still getting out there with his buddies and playing golf, and he still seems happy. You know, when you see him off the set, he'd be smiling and seems like he's still happy.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, God, I was in such a state of shock because he's one of my, you know, I think he's a real legitimate movie star. And
oh, no doubt.
I mean, God, just he's one of those people that the camera loves. There's just, it's like you said, it's raw charisma.
Yeah.
I went to his wedding.
Wow.
When he married Demi Moore. It was the craziest wedding.
Wow.
It was over. It took place in 3 sound stages.
My God.
You know, sound stage isn't big enough really for a wedding when you think about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there were 3 of them, and it was the most over the top, paid for by a studio.
Wow.
I think TriStar paid for it because they wanted either Bruce and or me to do one of their movies. And so they figured the way to do it would be pay for their wedding. And it was such a spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
It was beyond belief.
I'm bummed I missed it. I didn't get the invite.
I mean, you're probably in the Philippines.
I might have been.
And you worked with John Travolta in American Metal.
Yeah, he's awesome, man. He is great. He is just a really good dude. And, you know, he's telling a lot of stories about, you know, piloting a plane. I believe he flew out to Alabama. He did, in his own plane, which is pretty damn cool.
That he parks in his driveway.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that. That's pretty cool. It's like you pull your car up to the front door. He pulls his plane up to the front door.
It's like it's like George Jetson coming home in the spaceship.
It really is. It's so cool. And he talked a bit about Kevin Connolly, who he worked with on Gotti, about how crazy that experience was. You know, when the actual Gotti's were hanging out on the set watching you. It's got to be a little intimidating.
Yeah, for sure.
And I loved him, man. He's just really cool. I think that's going to be a good movie. American Metal.
John, I had the pleasure of you ever see those like Hollywood Reporter roundtable things where actors interview other actors? They asked me if I would interview John, and I was like, are you kidding me? Of course I will.
Wow.
I mean, again, very similar to Bruce in that just charisma.
Yeah.
You just love him.
Yes. Yeah, he's likable in everything.
Oh, and a great actor. Bruce is too, but John is so underrated as an actor.
He's great. And by the way, Gotti just proves that. He was so good in Gotti.
So good. I watched Saturday Night Fever again. If you guys out there, guys, gals, if you haven't watched Saturday Night Fever ever, God forbid, or if you haven't seen it in a long time, holy mother of mercury.
It's so good.
It's
the times better than any movie I know. And I saw it in the theater. I think I had to sneak into the theater. I was too young to really be in there. And boy, was that good.
Those were the days, man. Those were like... Those early, that moment in time in the 70s, It was just movie after movie after movie. Think about Saturday Night Fever. Think about this for a minute. If you took, pick your hot, young, it star of the moment today, there's no way in the world they get to be in a movie like Saturday Night Fever. You just wouldn't make it. They would never make it. They'd make it maybe on for a streamer, and it would be 8 episodes long.
Yeah.
But a summer movie? That was a summer movie. That was their big audience bet.
Yes. And the Bee Gees. I mean, busted that movie wide open with all that great. That soundtrack was the best ever.
It was insane. It was. I'm a big Bee Gees fan. There's a great Bee Gees documentary out on one of the streamers.
It was amazing. And how many songs they wrote for other people. They were really good. They were a rock and roll band in the beginning.
Yeah. And there's that great thing where they, at the end of one song, they wanted a high screaming falsetto. And Barry went in and did it. And everybody went, wait a minute.
That's his sound. That's the new sound we're looking for.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love all that stuff. What are you loving these days? Are you watching it? Oh, wait, hang on. Jesus Christ. I got to ask you about Reagan.
Yeah,
you
play
Jack Warner in Reagan.
Jack Warner. And Dennis Quaid, you probably know Dennis.
Love Dennis.
He's so good. He's so good and a great guy. And he does a really good Reagan. He does gets all the characteristics down. Another one of those great underrated actors, I feel. I think he's just amazing.
Well, you've worked with another one of my favorite underrated actors, Kurt Russell.
Yo, Kurt's, yeah. Kurt's the best, man.
Kurt's the best. Dude, he's the best. He's the best.
He is so cool, man. He is so cool. We actually had an extra scene together at one stage, and he's like, you know, kid, this might not make it into the film. I'm like, no, don't tell me that. Please don't tell me. He told me that before we started filming. He goes, this is the one scene that could get cut.
He's an expert.
So I was like, he goes, make it good, kid. Make it good. And I did the best I could, and it ended up getting cut in the end. But he was like, hey, you gave it a chance, kid. You gave it a chance. He was great.
I would love to work with him.
Yeah.
I mean,
legend.
He's
Snake Plissken.
Dude, have you ever seen his movie Bone Tomahawk?
No, I have not. I think I caught pieces of it.
Horror Western.
Wow.
And it is absolutely, I'm just telling you, trust me when I say, watch it immediately.
Okay.
Bone Tomahawk.
Bone Tomahawk.
By the greatest name ever.
Write that down. It is cool.
Bone Tomahawk. I will say this. It is 100% the most graphically violent movie I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
So be prepared. If you don't like blood.
That's right up my alley. You're not scaring me with that.
If you don't like blood and gore, you're not going to make it through this.
But blood and gore.
But he has, it's one of his greatest performances.
Wow.
I love him so much.
I love him in Snake Plissken. I thought you were dead.
Yeah.
Escape from New York. Great movie.
And The Thing is my other favorite movie.
The Thing is a great movie. Keith David.
Yeah. Child, where'd you
that
go?
That movie
Child?
Was, I mean, when that head has got, that grows legs and it's running around the floor, that was a scary movie.
Such a good movie. So you play Jack Warner.
Yeah.
What did you learn about Jack Warner? Anything I need to know about him? He seemed like the kind of most mellow of the studio heads, or am I wrong?
No. He was a very intense guy who, he had a lot to do with, putting SAG together.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And that's why he got Reagan to be the first Screen Actors Guild president. A lot of people don't realize it. He was the first Screen Actors Guild president. It was great playing Jack. You know, I got to put on the bald cap and wear these, these wild double-breasted suits. And it was cool. It was cool. It's a small part. I didn't have a lot to do, but it was good. It was a fun role.
You got
role.
To work with, and Dennis was Reagan. And were you working with Dennis as Reagan?
Yes. All my scenes were with Dennis, who killed it. And we would hang out afterwards. We were both staying at the same hotel, and we would go down to the lobby, start playing the piano.
And, Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yeah, and he was playing that stuff, and he still got it all down.
Is he, last time I saw him, he was obsessed with golf. Is he still golfing like a lunatic?
Yeah, we played a couple times out there.
Where are you playing these days? Where do you play?
I'm a member at Sadakoi here in L.A.,
yeah,
which is kind of like the Camarillo area. Great golf course, but I'm also a member of Wingfoot in New York.
No.
Are you
way.
Golfing?
Yes, I love it. I'm obsessed with it.
I thought I saw your shirt. Look. Is that like Augusta?
Augusta.
Nice, dude. I've never played there. I'm dying to play there. How was it?
It is everything you think it's going to be and more.
Wow.
And it's the experience the experience is like it's unlike any other, as Jim Nance would tell you.
I didn't know you played golf. Is this something you're just doing now? Is it new for you? Or
I screwed around as a kid, never really liked it one way or the other. When I got sober, a lot of guys, when they get sober, take up three things: coffee, cigar, and golf. I took up all three of them.
Yeah.
and then I had kids and put it away for 20 years. Literally 20 years, I probably didn't swing a club.
Wow.
Then when my kids are out of the house, I was like, you know what? I've got free time. I'm really going to commit to golf. Mm. Which was great because I started with, you know, really learning the swing from the ground up.
We'll have to tee it up, bro.
I would love that. Put together a group and come play Sandpiper.
Oh, man, I would love to. I'd love that golf course right on the ocean. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
That's basically my home course.
Nice. And Kevin Connolly now, he's playing too. So we'll get Doug Allen. We could drag him out there. He'll play a little bit.
Let's do it.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, are you a guy that believes in having music on the golf course?
Or are you
anti-music? You love the— I knew it. We are Dylan. You have to have your boombox.
I love it. I love the music. I just love it on the golf course. Big boom box like Matty D.
Like big Matty D with the boom.
Yeah.
Looking for a sparkling clean bathroom without so much hassle? Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner is here to revolutionize your cleaning future. Just spray today, rinse tomorrow, and voila! Enjoy a sparkling clean shower and tub without any scrubbing. It's the secret to a hassle-free, clean bathroom that many are discovering. With over 33,000 five-star reviews, Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner has proven its effectiveness on shower glass, fixtures, tiles, and more, ensuring everything shines with minimal effort. This product has gained a loyal following thanks to its once-a-week application that makes it a standout in the cleaning aisle. Join the ranks of satisfied users who enjoy more me time and less clean time with Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner, available at Amazon, Lowe's, Menards, Home Depot, and Ace Hardware. It's the perfect choice for anyone wanting to simplify their cleaning routine. Don't miss out on a chance to transform your bathroom cleaning with just one application a week. Pick up a bottle of Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner today and join the thousands who've already made the switch to Effortless Clean. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. I know that for me, people are out, people are about, people want to do stuff, and we want to do it, but it can be a grind. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/RobLowe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/RobLowe.
I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high-performance EVs. They're certainly out there, but when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it, and I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience. And of course, it's an EV, so the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle: music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia,
movement that inspires.
Matty D, let's talk a little bit about Matty D. I mean, okay, I remember so vividly this one scene in The Outsiders. It's late at night. It's where we shoot him. His character Dallas is going to be shot by the cops.
Yeah.
It's late. The sun's coming up. Matt is wearing a prosthetic on his chest that's taken 2 hours to put on.
Oh, boy.
It's very clear that we have probably one shot at this before the sun comes up. It's eight cameras. We come running down the street. Matt comes into the park. The cops cue the cop. It's a lot of working pieces. And we're rolling. He's about to get shot. And Matt ad-libs, "You'll never take me alive." And I remember so vividly going, that is the worst ad-lib I've ever. He can't be serious. And they shoot, by the way, in the movie. It's in the movie.
Wow. Wow. I got to rewatch this movie. I haven't seen it in so long.
"They'll never take me alive." Like, it's Jimmy Cagney in 1940. But you know, I got to say, I've never been on a show where a director was more in love with an actor than Francis was with Matt. He was in love with he would literally, your brother shit ice cream on that show. I mean, literally, he could do anything, and Francis thought it was the greatest thing ever. He could even yell, "You'll never take me alive," and Francis put it in the movie. It was
unreal. I can't
wait
to use that line. He shit ice cream. I mean,
yes.
It's just great.
It was, right? I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was fun to watch. It was fun to watch.
What a movie that was.
Right?
Oh, my God. Such a cool movie.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the stories that we could tell on that one were.
Yeah. And talk about a cast. It's like a platoon cast, but.
Absolutely.
T. Cruz, and that was great.
T. Cruz, yeah. Those were. And I always remembered just always, like I said, your bro being so gracious, and I just looked up to him so much. He's not that much older than me, but you would have thought in terms of experience.
Yeah.
And Swayze was older than Matt, but
yeah.
Matt still was kind of like the guy.
Yeah. Well, he started so young. He started at 13. So it felt like he had been around for a long time by then.
Right.
And
yeah.
He was such a, you know, big teen idol back in those days.
Oh man.
As were you.
Tiger Beat. You know what I learned later on is that, Francis Coppola asked for Michelle Manning, his assistant, to go to a 7-Eleven and bring back all of the Teen Idol magazines and cut out the pictures, the people who appeared most, and put their pictures on a board. And that's how Matt and I got on his radar. It was literally from that. I mean, Francis definitely
and Teen Bag and all those
and Teen Bop me and
yeah, I mean, I got on those a couple times myself, but I never really hit it. I didn't hit it big on those magazines.
Oh, come on now, I don't believe that. You're just being
no,
you're
I
just
really
being
didn't. Modest. I didn't hit it like, I mean, you guys were global. I mean, you guys became huge.
Now, I wonder, do those things even exist anymore? Do you think?
I don't think they do.
Is Timothy Chalamet out there? You know, and like, who would it be? It'd be Timothy Chalamet and Austin Butler and like what they want for breakfast and their favorite sweaters and all this. Their what puppy dog
yeah, I
they
wonder if
want.
they're out there anymore. Those Teen Bags and Tiger Beats and maybe they're online. Maybe there's online versions.
Austin Butler's holiday wishes for you and your puppy. Just like really hard hitting journalism like that.
I'll tell you, Matt hated it. After a while, he was like, I don't want to be on these magazines anymore. Nobody's ever going to take me seriously if I stay on these things.
Who was Matt's manager?
Vic Ramos.
Oh, my God, Vic Ramos.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my. He was Colonel Tom Parker.
He was like, yeah, he was a lot like him.
Colonel Tom Parker to Matt Zelvis.
Matt was cut in class. He used to be a casting director. Matt was cut in class at the Homics in Mamaroneck. And outside smoking a cigarette at 13. And he was casting Over the Edge. And he met Matt.
Oh, my God.
He said, "Hey, will you come in and read for us for a movie?" Matt came in. They were like, "God, this is our guy." Over the Edge. Very cool movie.
Oh,
great,
yeah.
Great soundtrack. Cheap Trick and all that. It was really cool.
Jesus. When you decided to be an actor, because I know, like, when Chad, my brother, decided to be an actor, we both had a moment of, like, having to navigate that. Was Matt supportive? Was he, like, great? Or was he like, what are you, hey, this is my bag? Or did you have trepidation about it? Like, how did that go for you guys as brothers?
Well, I started out doing school plays. I played Petruchio in The Taming of the Shrew. I got kind of roped into doing that. And I didn't really want to do it. But then after doing three nights of that play and getting the laughs on stage, I was like, this is it. I want to do this.
Right.
And I think Matt was more afraid of, for me, he was afraid for me of what could happen. Because most guys aren't going to make it.
Right.
But after, after I got some work, he was, you know, very supportive.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. You were clearly, before Chad, you were already a big star.
Chad and Charlie Sheen, even right up until Charlie did Platoon, were going to be Major League Baseball players.
I remember Charlie. Yeah. Charlie was big into it. I remember he brought two mitts to the Philippines. We would have a catch in the Philippines. He had an arm, man. He had a sick arm.
Charlie could probably throw in his, at 16 and 17 years old, Charlie could probably throw 87 miles an hour.
Yeah. Impressive.
Yeah. He absolutely could have been, without a question, at least a minor league pro baseball player.
And that's why he's so great. And great basketball player, too. He's got a great jump shot.
Yep.
By the way, I don't know if you heard that me and Charlie did a little pilot.
Oh, thank you.
Did you hear about this?
Thank you. Okay, no, I heard all about it. You have to tell me everything because Doug Ellen self-financed this.
Yes, he did. Yes.
So
along with Ted Foxman, who he put a lot of money in, but it's really, I mean, right now it's basically the pilot's been shot and it's really basically like a home video. Until it gets sold, and I think it will sell because it's really good. So it's me and Charlie and Kevin Connolly with Doug Allen writing it. We got John C. McGinley in there. It's going to be great, dude.
And it's called?
It's called Ramble On.
Like the Led Zeppelin song.
Like the Zeppelin song, but it's more about the podcast world. Dude, you could be totally in this. I could totally see
what is this. What is the plot? Tell me the plot. What a great group.
It's a weird kind of situation. We are playing ourselves, but we're not really playing ourselves. Kind of
right.
Like
yep.
Larry David really isn't Larry David, you know?
Exactly. I
mean, it's kind of that situation. So you could come on playing yourself with your podcast. I mean, it could totally work.
I love that. And the theory about what I loved about it was hearing about it was just the idea of the self-financing and you guys controlling your own destiny and you know, not being beholden to anybody and making what you want to make and then going out and selling it.
We all did it for free. I mean, we had to get paid scale for SAG.
Right.
But yeah, it's our baby right now and we're going to pitch it. And it's really good, dude. It's quick. It's a half hour comedy.
I'm assuming you will go to the usual suspects, the Netflixes, the Hulus, the Disney+.
They're
going to
pitch it out. They're going to show it to everyone. Hopefully they'll have a little, let them battle it out and see who gets it. But I got a feeling it's going to go. I really do.
Oh, I would love that.
I've done enough bad ones, and I've done some good ones, like Entourage. This thing is good, and it will go. I believe it will go.
And how was Sir Charles? He's such a funny man.
He was great, man. He's such a great guy, and I've always loved Charlie. And he's great, really great in this movie. And this movie feels like a movie, but and this TV show. He's amazing. And he's always been great. And I think the world misses him. And it'll be great to be seeing him again. It really will.
Totally. I couldn't agree with you more.
And it's Charlie kind of playing Charlie a little bit. Some of it's going to be real, some of it not. But it's going to be funny.
I heard Charlie gave up smoking.
Yeah. Well, I don't know when he did, but yeah, he wasn't smoking on the set. That's for sure.
God, I can't picture him.
I gave it up 15 years ago.
That's very good. Your brother probably sold more cigarettes for people.
He probably killed a couple people along the way. You know what? Cigarettes look cool on film.
They just do.
The smoke. Do you know what? And you just look
they just do, right? There's just no way around it. There's a reason why people smoke on screen.
Yeah, you got one dangling out of your mouth. You could flick it. You could do all kind of blow a smoke ring. You know, there's a lot of cool things. It's a good prop.
And they really have excised it out of movies. They really have.
Well, you know, I started up. I think I quit three times, and I would always start up again because I'd be like, oh, this character's got to smoke. He's a smoking character.
Yes, of course.
Start up again. And even Entourage got me smoking again because we were smoking so much weed and they would use cigarette tobacco. And
yep.
I fell back into it because all the other guys smoked and I started smoking again.
It's a slippery slope, this smoking. I was never a cigarette smoker, but when you're sitting around other actors that you admire and you're just talking and if they're all smoking and you're in rehearsals and the hours are long, it's just one of those things that you just kind of start doing.
Yeah, because they look so damn cool doing it.
Right? Just to punctuate. You can punctuate on a...
Yeah, and it's kind of like punctuates anything you do. You know, I just ate a meal, I have a cigarette. After sex, got to have a cigarette. You know, it's a punctuation.
So good. So you have the movie Hot Seat with Gibson.
I mean, working with Mel for the second time. I did something in Paris, France with him called On the Line. He's a great guy. I don't know. Do you know Mel? Yeah.
I do know Mel. We've had the same publicist for years. I adore him.
Yeah, he's fun, man. He's got so many cool stories. Great sense of humor.
Yep.
And we had some good stuff in this one. Yeah.
What is the premise?
It's called Hot Seat, and it kind of explains what's going on here. I'm a computer hacker who's been in trouble for hacking, and he's kind of got his life back together. And he's doing IT work for this company, and he gets roped into he gets a bomb put under his seat, and someone's making him hack for them.
Gotcha.
So the whole time, I mean, half the movie, I have a bomb under my seat. It was tricky, man. It was tough. It was a 7-day shoot, Rob.
Whoa.
Seven. And the dialogue, we had a 26-page day of dialogue with me and one other person. I mean, it was unreal, but we did it, and I feel like we didn't miss a beat. Everything's there. I don't know how they did it, but 7 days, and it came out great.
You know, it always amazes me what can be accomplished on a short schedule if you have the right actors, the right crew, and the right pre-logistics.
Yeah, and that was the key here, the logistics. I was stuck in the seat for half of it. And I couldn't get away from my desk. So
now, did you resort to my mind immediately goes to, well, I'm going to be looking at a screen. It wouldn't be the worst thing to have my dialogue on the screen.
You know, I put a little note here and there. Occasionally. Yes. I had a lot of weird, you know, dialogue that was IT dialogue, like,
oh,
you know, technical terms. And
yes,
yeah, it's not the end of the world if I taped one on the screen here, if I taped one over here somewhere as I'm looking up at the camera, and yeah, little tricks to the trade. But for the most part, I like to know my lines. I mean, when you're doing a 7-day shoot, it's allowed.
It's good enough for Marlon Brando. It's good enough for me.
Yeah, well, Brando would pin it on your shirt and look at your, put it on the ceiling too, right?
It's amazing. It's hilarious.
Yeah, that's before he went with the earwig.
Yeah, earwig didn't. I worked with an actor who, I didn't think needed it. I think he was just, I don't know, maybe he just didn't want to do it. But a famous actor, famous character actor, and working with an actor with an earwig, which you've told me you did with Willis,
yeah,
it feels like they're on a, like on, like the old episodes of Larry King Live, where like, go on, you're in Roanoke, Virginia, go ahead. And then it takes like 5 seconds for them to answer.
There's a delay.
The delay is not good.
No, it's not good for the other actor.
No.
You're waiting.
Well, this actor would also, as he was hearing the line that he was about to say, you could see his eyes like kind of roll back up in his head.
He's looking off to the left and right. And just,
yeah, and like, and then kind of their lips are slightly moving like they're going to say.
They're repeating what they're hearing.
Yes. So funny.
It's tough, dude. It's tough. No doubt.
Oh, God, actors. God bless us all. That's what
I mean, that's the thing is... you only have so much room for so much dialogue. I mean, you got to let go of it the next day. People will ask, hey, say that line from that movie. And you're like, I can't remember a single line from a past movie at all. Victory. That's all I got for you, bro.
That's it.
That's it. Victory. That's all they want to hear nowadays anyway.
And all I've got is literally. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the star of Hot Seat, Kevin Dillon. Just a sweetheart. He's always been one of the sweetest guys. Always has been. He hasn't, and I'm glad to see that success has not changed him one bit.
All right, just one more thing before we end today's episode. Let's check the lowdown line.
Hello, you've reached literally in our lowdown line, where you can get the lowdown on all things about me, Rob Lowe. 323-570-4551. So have at it. Here's the beep.
Hey, Rob, it's Tony from Fullerton, California. But kind of like a Generation X Johnny Carson. I really like your interview style. And I was wondering if you had a regular, like a traditional late night talk show, would you have a sidekick and who would it be? And also, what would be your sort of house band? So think about that. Thanks a lot. You're doing a great job. Bye.
Wow. I love that. Thanks, man. What a cool idea. What a great parlor game. Who would be your sidekick of your late night talk show? For sure. I think you have having a late night talk show would be great. Do you think David Spade would do it? He wouldn't. He's too big of a star. But I'm thinking of people that I have a relationship with and that I know would be funny. It'd have to be somebody funny. Somebody who's just a killer. David Duchovny? He'd never do it. But he's so dry. He doesn't talk much. So he'd actually be a great sidekick. I'm going to go with David Duchovny or David Spade. Or how about Ice-T? I think Ice-T and I might be the couple America didn't know that they needed. That's what I think. Anyway, thank you. Oh, a house band. There have been so many great house bands. I always loved the Max Weinberg Five on Conan, or the Max Weinberg, whatever they were great. The Roots are great. Paul Schaefer, of course, is and was amazing. But then again, there's also something about having a DJ. I'm gonna bring Max Weinberg off the E Street Band and make him play for me. That's what I'm doing. All right. Thanks, brother. Join me next week, everybody. You're going to really love our guest next week. I can't say who it is yet. Just trust me. It's going to be good. And five-star review would be wonderful if you're so inclined on Apple. And I'll see you next week right here on Literally.
You've been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe, produced by me, Rob Schulte, with help from associate producer Sarah Begar. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. Our research is done by Alyssa Grawl. The podcast is executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. All of the music you hear is by Devin Bryant. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Literally with Rob Lowe.
This has been a Team Coco production. In association with Stitcher.